What would it take to become a U.S. citizen today, right now? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today on The Larry Mueller Show, and our next guest leads Immigration Legal Services for the Catholic Multicultural Center based in Madison. Carmel Carpati is here to answer questions about the immigration process, how it has changed, and the path to U.S. citizenship. So we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Carmel, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and for starters here, what's the Catholic Multicultural Center? Why is it involved in immigration services in Wisconsin? What's the connection there?
So our agency, while we have a number of services that we provide, we have an immigration legal services program that's been in existence for, I think since 2012. So our sort of agency's goal is for our immigration program is to help newcomers or help those not from the United States become integrated and become more like neighbors.
So what kind of services do you provide, Carmel?
So for our immigration legal services, so for Catholic Multicultural Center in general, we have basic services such as a food pantry, free meal program, ESL classes and job training, and then for our immigration, to name a few. And for our immigration program, we provide services to individuals who are seeking mostly affirmative immigration benefits, which really mostly encompasses family-based petitions and humanitarian-based petitions. We don't do employment-based applications, which would be when a company or business would be trying to petition to get more workers to their company. Mm-hmm. And we don't do too much removal defense. We do a little bit of that, but mostly it's what we consider in the affirmative realm.
And Carmel, what's your role in helping people through this immigration process?
So I am the managing attorney with our immigration program, and we have a staff of myself, another immigration attorney, a DOJ accredited rep, a legal assistant, some volunteer attorneys, and then two more staff, which will be hopefully joining us in the next few weeks.
Oh,
so we're growing, actually.
So who are the people that you work for? Who are some of the immigrants that you come across? How would you describe them?
So for our services and who we are providing services to, last year we served people from 85 different countries. So it's a quite a big range of people whom we serve. And I think our numbers of just for last year alone, we provided services or consultations to close to 1,000 people last year. But in terms of who we serve, those would be refugees, refugees who are here seeking to apply for legal permanent residence, DACA recipients who want to renew, people want to apply for citizenship, a huge spectrum of different kinds of cases come across our paths. And for a person to actually qualify for our services, it's based upon geography and also financial. So if a family is at 300% or below the federal poverty guidelines for that household size, we can serve them. And also if they live within our geographic area of basically, it's 11 counties.
11 counties in the South Central Wisconsin area?
That is correct.
What have you seen changed in the past year, Carmel? And what are you experiencing in your line of work with changes to immigration, questions about immigration, and deportations underway?
Yes. So as people or your listeners can probably imagine, there have been a lot of changes under this administration. specifically under immigration law, and as a result, very basically saying we are extremely busy. We were pretty busy to start with last year, but in the past 6 months, we have gotten much more busy with a lot of uncertainty, yeah, with not with our clients or potential clients not really knowing what their options are now, just because of the increase in changes under federal immigration law. So with the, you know, with the constant changes and rapid changes, we have to sort of be up to date on the various laws and be able to counsel people as best as we can, also knowing that those policies might change the next day, or you know, there might be a lawsuit filed to try to stop a particular action from being enforced, and it might be on pause. So a lot of these, I would say the biggest change has been the increase in volume, but also the uncertainty by our clients, but also by practitioners, because we have to, you know, try to keep on top of all the different changes that are going on.
And how do you do that as an immigration attorney right now?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we're constantly having to do legal education, attending webinars, talking with colleagues. Our agency, Catholic Multicultural Center, is an affiliate of a larger organization called Clinic, which has affiliates all across the country. And it's really great being an affiliate of Clinic because they offer sort of nationwide, you know, guidance, but also technical support for maybe kind of thorny, you know, cases that we're not really sure, you know, what we could do or should do. So we have a lot of resources and people who are experts, who are also staying on top of these changes nationwide.
Carmel Carpati is our guest, lead immigration legal services she leads immigration legal services for the Catholic Multicultural Center based in Madison. We invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org. Carmel, you'd mentioned the uncertainty among the immigrants that you serve. Is there fear there as well?
Definitely. There is a lot of fear. Fear of potentially being separated from family members, fear of, you know, they might have had a petition or an application pending to bring a family member to the United States to live permanently, and now maybe that petition has been put on hold, or, you know, maybe there's a likelihood that it's going to be denied greater than what it was before. Fear that they might get picked up by ICE. It's very clear that the uncertainty has caused a lot of fear among those people who are serving.
Seen some news stories about people who are here in the United States legally who have decided to self-deport. Have you seen any stories of self-deportation in your work, Carmel?
But also I think so for folks who are here legally, possibly, I would say that those who are actually, who might have a legal status here and who might have an ability to apply for something that would allow them to stay here permanently, probably they would not use that option of self-deporting if there is another option available to them. And when I say that, I mean like since we work in the family realm, it might be an application that a family member is able to file for them that would allow them to stay here, or humanitarian options such as asylum, or potentially a U visa case, something that, you know, maybe they have Maybe they have a good case that they could wait it out here until that case gets decided.
Has the path to U.S. citizenship been changed in any way with the changes to immigration policy here in the United States?
That's also a good question. So, you know, in our experience as an agency or as a service provider, we do file a lot of citizenship applications. We did, you know, before there was a change in the administration, and we continue to do so. We're still getting those approved. So we think that's, you know, obviously that's a great thing, and we continue to file those applications. One thing I would note is that the length of time that it takes to decide an application, like for example, for citizenship, I think is slowing down. So while we're still seeing approvals, we're still seeing people get interviewed and get scheduled for oath swearing in ceremonies, it's just taking longer, but they're getting approved.
And when you say taking longer, what's that time frame, generally speaking, look like?
Oh, gosh. I would say perhaps over a year from the time of filing an application.
Okay.
And I think one important thing to remember is that everybody's case is different. And
right.
So everyone, there might be circumstances in one person's case, they might look, you know, on its face to be similar, but there's definitely going to be differences. So, you know, I would say maybe over a year, maybe 15 months.
What's the cost look like?
So that has also been, that's also a really good question, because there was an increase in filing fees for certain applications that didn't, you know, that were not, these filing fees might not have been in existence last month. But for citizenship specifically, it's pretty high. It's $760 to file for citizenship application if you're filing on paper. You can also file online for $710.
Carmel Capati is our guest. She leads immigration legal services for the Madison-based Catholic Multicultural Center. And we're talking about the path to U.S. citizenship, the changes to immigration, the uncertainty, and some of the fear that now exists, and what can be done about it, what the path to citizenship looks like today, and who our new U.S. citizens will be down the road. 800-642-1234 to join our conversation. You can also send us an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to WPR News. Join us again tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show. It's Friday, and that means Garden Talk from 11 to 1. Liz Freemuth is back. She'll be explaining how to add color to your garden through the autumn. And then we'll take a look at the plants that just for one reason or another refuse to grow well together. Coming up on Garden Talk on The Larry Mueller Show, that's tomorrow from 11 to 1. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. And our guest is Carmel Capati, who leads immigration legal services for the Catholic Multicultural Center based in Madison, taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or emailing talk@WPR.org. Let's go to Jonah in Caledonia. Jonah, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
So my grandma came to the U.S. from France when she was in her early to mid-20s. We called her Mammy. Mammy wasn't treated very well, unfortunately, by the people in my hometown. She spoke different. She dressed different. And they kind of turned up their noses at her. And I feel like if they had the kind of push, if the people in my hometown had the kind of push they do now to suspect their neighbor of wrongdoing, I don't know if she would have stayed. But point is, I'm wondering how the prejudice she experienced in, you know, like the 50s in Wisconsin, how it compares to the prejudice that immigrants are experiencing now in the modern day. I'm wondering if the guest can shed any light on that subject.
I can certainly relate, Jonah. My great-grandma came from Italy, refused to speak English, and also faced some tough times as an immigrant here in this country, and that's not lost on the rest of my family. And Carmel, what do you see about how the landscape of prejudice has changed over the time, or if it's just shifted, or if perhaps it hasn't changed at all?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I also, my own family's experience, we are a family of immigrants. I am from the Philippines, and we came here as immigrants in the 1960s. And actually, my parents settled in a rural area in Wisconsin. And there at that time, there was certainly challenges, I would say, with, you know, people like us who are brown folks who were in an area that maybe didn't see a lot of people who looked like us.
Yeah.
So has it changed? I think what I feel like it's just gotten more verbal, I guess, or more I don't know, maybe that there's more I don't know, willingness to state your issues or prejudices, maybe in public or to someone directly, that then maybe it wasn't in the past.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. I feel like it's always been an issue though. But you know, maybe it's just sort of manifesting in different ways now. I don't know. It's a good question.
It is. And I appreciate you asking it, Jonah. Let's go to James and Merton next. James, good afternoon.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. I just had a question for your guest. Given the fact that a religion is within the title of her company and the services, are there any restrictions on or any faith restrictions for the clients that they represent? And I can take my answer off the air.
Okay, you can take it either way, James, but it's a fair question. As our guest leads the Immigration Legal Services for the Catholic Multicultural Center, are there religious restrictions, Carmel?
Not at all. Okay. we our clients are a spectrum of faiths, no faiths, different kinds of faiths. That's not at all a criteria for us.
Michael in Middleton emailed and asked if an ICE raid arrest automatically shifts someone from the civil immigration system to the criminal system. Does an ICE raid arrest make you a criminal in the eyes of the law?
Not necessarily. I guess one of the issues would be what was the basis for perhaps an ICE arrest in the first place? I think what sort of has been, you know, out in the public is that if someone has a criminal record or something, they're going to be a target for ICE.
Mm-hmm.
There's not necessarily parameters as to what that type of, you know, criminal activity might be, but that has definitely been a message that we're receiving. So I think the question is, you know, you can kind of, there's going to be two different systems. So there's going to be a state criminal potential charge, I guess, along with a potential civil immigration enforcement case going on as well. So there might be two types of cases going on.
Are you seeing ICE raids in Wisconsin, Carmel?
In Madison, we haven't. I don't believe that we've seen ICE raids on particular, you know, employers or, you know, large scale like that, maybe in other states that have larger immigration populations. I haven't. I'm not saying that they don't
right.
occur or haven't occurred, but we're not, at least I'm not aware of it.
I think it's worth reiterating here, because sometimes the goldfish doesn't know what the water is in the fishbowl, that if you're in the middle of it, you don't necessarily understand it. And
right.
I think perhaps you've got a unique perspective from your personal story and your professional work. Who wants to be a U.S. citizen, and why are they willing to risk deportation to a country they've never been to? Why are they willing to face some prejudice? Who is it that wants to come here and be and stay here? What makes a person want to be a U.S. citizen in your mind, Carmel?
Again, a really great question, which I do ask, but normally, you know, the people who we see as our clients have left pretty dire situations and circumstances in their home country. I think it's fair to say it is not an easy decision that someone has to make to leave their country. It is not an easy decision. And for them to make that decision, to risk their lives, to actually just get to the United States, has to tell you something like, well, it must have been pretty bad from where they came from, right? So why would people want to stay and risk that for opportunity to make a decent living, to be able to support their families, to be able to send their kids to good schools? Sort of the same reasons why Americans want to be in the United States, right? For those very same reasons, for opportunities, and that might not exist in their home countries. And again, people, you know, they wait for years and years and years here in the United States, waiting for a possible application to get adjudicated. And they're willing to do it because they believe that the end result is worth it.
What do you say to people who are not here legally right now, people who may have overstayed their visas or people who entered without permission? What is there legal advice that you provide to them in general?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with our, with our legal services program, we do this all the time. We have sort of general options, consultations for people who might be in that situation like you're talking about. They might be undocumented. They're not really sure if they have an option.
Mm-hmm.
They might have an option that they just aren't aware of. So when they have a consultation with us, we go through the various details of how they entered into the United States, family members who might have legal status, you know, all these sorts of other screening type questions where we could possibly try to find something that they are legally eligible to apply for under immigration law. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I would say most of the consultations we have, there is an option for them. Not all of them,
I can
say. Because we do consultations with people and we scan and screen for every possible item, and at the end of the consultation, we determine that there is no lawful option for them to apply for permanent status here in the U.S. And we have to tell them that, right?
So even if somebody is here not legally in the United States, they can still reach out to you and contact you?
Absolutely.
What's the best way to do that, Carmel?
The best way to do that is to contact our legal assistant who screens all of our, individuals who either email or call and just say, you know, I don't know if I have any option. I would like a consultation. I can give that number.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Okay. The number is 608-441-0114. And that's the number of our assistant who will go through our little screening questions and see if it's a type of case also that we would be able to take.
608-441-0114. Is there potential for referral notices or referral support for people who might be outside your service area, Carmel?
For those outside of our service area, they will probably get referred because our service area is under the Diocese of Madison, and that's the 11 counties.
Right.
And so If it's outside of that 11 counties, you know, the person lives outside, then they would have to go to a different agency.
That phone number again, 608-441-0114. Carmel Kapati, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You as well. Carmel leads the Immigration Legal Services for the Madison-based Catholic Multicultural Center at 608-441-0114. I want to thank you for being a part of the show today, and always thanks to our team, Clara Neipert, Joel Patenaud, Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau, and of course, Larry Mueller. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. Join us again tomorrow for Garden Talk from 11 to 1 right here on WPR News.